So how come whenever we're about to start, suddenly all the noises also have to start?
We have to get all the noises out of our system, all the burps, farts, hiccups, sneezes.
I know, but if I said, okay, I'm going to start, so if you need to burp, hiccup, or sneeze, do it now, you'd be like, okay, I'm good. And then I would go to click, and you would burp, hiccup, fart, and sneeze all at the same time. You would explode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Thought Honey Podcast. I'm Andy.
And I'm Leah.
And here we go, quote of the day.
Yay!
Episode 18.
Oh, we're up there. Once we hit 20, we should do something special for 20.
So, quote of the day. This is from a guy named Chris Jamie. He is a poet, writer, philosopher.
What's something he's written?
Venus in Arms.
Oh.
So interesting. Look up Chris Jamie. Interesting guy. But he said, to say that one waits a lifetime for his soulmate to come around is a paradox. People eventually get sick of waiting, take a chance on someone, and by the art of commitment become soulmates, which takes a lifetime to perfect.
Okay, so this quote made me giggle because if that doesn't perfectly and accurately describe how you found me, come on, where you were like, ah, I'm not going to wait around for my soulmate. She's pretty great. And then what was it you said to me just to,
is this based on our conversation last week?
last week
where you were like, that's not quite what I was trying to say, but like, I get
I'm
it.
I'm grateful for you and you turned out way better than I expected.
Okay. Like that. That's not exactly what I meant. That might be what I said, but it's not the spirit of what I was trying to say. But let me circle back to that.
Okay.
So the quote, it was kind of a longer one to just hear and wrap your head around it. So let me just kind of go through it again. The idea of soulmates, right? You wait a lifetime. You're searching for this soulmate, this person that you're just going to connect with, and it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I don't really believe in soulmates. I think it's ridiculous that there's this one person out there that is your soulmate, and anyone else is just not going to be as good for you. I just think that's kind of silly. There's lots of people, honestly, that we could be happy with.
We're all made from the same stardust.
Yeah. And interesting thing, though, is once you've picked a person, that shifts a little bit. But we'll save that part for later. But the point that he's making with this is that if you search for a person who's perfect for you already, eventually you're going to realize, you're going to start to get skeptical and doubtful. Oh, am I ever going to find this person?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I like the way he puts it. You take a chance on someone. It's not you settled. It's just that, you know what? I wasn't 100% sure that things were going to work out great with this person. And you never are. Your marriage is always a risk, frankly.
Yeah.
Long-term relationships are always risky.
Mm-hmm.
But by the art of commitment, we become soulmates, which is by staying committed to each other and working through things, not ending the relationship just because things got a little bit rough. Giving it a chance, working through it. Leah and I, you and I have discovered our differences.
Oh yeah,
over the last 3 years, more so than we did in the first maybe 3 years of our relationship.
Yeah,
would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like we aired a lot of dirty laundry in the beginning when we were like friends and not really sure if this was, you know, going anywhere. When we were dating, we talked about a lot of hard things, and yet, despite talking and having those hard conversations, like, do you remember sitting in the grass, like, across from the apartment complexes? Or, like, one time we walked down and sat on the steps of a church or something like that. But we had hard conversations. But what that did was that just deepened our care for each other and understanding, because we were both willing to talk about it. And neither of us walked away or were like, that's too much.
Yeah. Like, when we were still friends, we weren't, I mean, the thing that made us friends is that we talked about all the ways that we were messed up and we kind of bonded over that.
Yeah.
And then when we decided that we were also romantically attracted to each other, then we were like, all right, well, there's not really anything that we have to like hide. Like it wasn't like 6 months in, I was like, Leah, so I have to tell you, I'm messed up in this way. Or you had to find out that I was messed up in this way. You already kind of knew.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of there, and I think we coasted on that for a few years. And then I think as we got more secure with each other and just more secure with ourselves, and we were just healthier people, that we were just on more stable ground to kind of argue a little bit more.
Yeah.
And we're not, I mean, we're not an arguing couple, really. Like, we're more conflict avoidant in terms of couples.
Definitely.
But, like, we'll push on each other a lot more. I mean, just today we were having this conversation about risk aversion and how I'm, like, crazy risk averse. And Leah is more likely to take action and just lean into things and do things. And that's a thing that comes up between us, like, all the time, is that I'm over here analyzing and thinking and waiting. And you're like, can we just do something already?
Right. Well, and the trick that we are finally learning almost 7 years into our relationship is, well, I know for me, I don't know if I can say that this is something you're learning or if you already knew it. But for me, I'm learning that there's no moral, like, neither of them are morally better than the other. Like, today it kind of clicked where you were like, it's not that you're wrong. It's not that I'm wrong. It's just we have different ways of doing this. And it was sort of this, like, because the first year or two of marriage, you want to please your spouse. You want to please your partner. And so you might adjust and you might think, well, what I'm doing is wrong and it's not helping them. So I'm going to make changes. But that's not.
Right. And then you realize that your partner's actually missing out on something that you bring that they don't have.
Yeah.
Like, for me, if I were just to do things my way all the time, I would be more, I would likely miss out on opportunities because I thought about it too long and didn't take action. Right. And so that's the downside of mine. Now, when I do take action, it's pretty well thought out and it's likely that it's going to go well because I've thought it out really well, but I've missed lots of opportunities by waiting too long. Leah, on the other hand, the downside to hers is, you know, taking action a little bit faster and maybe getting into a tight spot because you jumped into something a little quick, but she's also not going to miss out on opportunities by overthinking and just kind of waiting around. Right. It's literally just a different way of being, and there's different pros and cons, but it's not better or worse. And something we're learning to navigate more and more is how do we manage that between us in different parts of our relationship? And I think that brings us to the last thing that he says, is that it takes a lifetime to perfect.
Absolutely.
It's not that you become someone's soulmate and then you are, and that's it. It's like you have to continue to work through these things. I mean, people change. You never are married to the same person at year 40 that you were at year one or two. Like, Leah, we've changed a ton since we got married. And, you know, it's like, oh, we've changed. Do I need to reevaluate whether or not we want to be in this relationship? I mean, sometimes I guess that can be true if the changes are of a certain nature. But I think the overwhelming majority of the time, it's how are we going to change and learn with each other? And that's the commitment part, right? Is it's a pattern of continuing to commit to each other and to figure out how to become each other's soulmate, so to speak.
Right. Change is a natural human thing. We are always evolving and growing. And the commitment part comes from, we're not going to end things just because things have changed. We're going to change together, adapt, whatever.
Yeah, we're at least going to try to figure this out, right? We're not just going to dump it and run, you know, because things got a little bit different. Right? All right, time for buzzwords. And today's is stonewalling. Which is...
It's the fourth horseman from Gottman's Four Horsemen.
Four of four. And so the first one was criticism. Then we had contempt, we had defensiveness, and today we are at stonewalling. So, Leah, why don't you go ahead and tell us what that is?
So, stonewalling, it's basically when you're in a discussion or an argument and one person withdraws from the interaction, either shutting down or closing themselves off from the other person because they're feeling overwhelmed.
All right. So, it's just disconnecting from the conversation.
Yeah.
And kind of what that looks like is it could be becoming unresponsive. So the person says something and you just don't respond.
Right. Like they look checked out. They're just
not paying attention. I'm not giving you any body language or nonverbal communication that says I'm listening. I'm not responding to you. It's just you make a point or you say something and I just don't do anything.
Yeah. I imagine a lot of the times it looks like you're in a discussion with your partner. And if you're pulling away, maybe you look at your phone, right? Like you're, or you're just kind of like something else is more important.
Yeah. Turning away, just tuning out in general.
acting busy, like going and doing the dishes or sweeping or cleaning.
Yeah. Or one of the other ones that Gottman lists is they call it doing obsessive behaviors. And so I'm just sitting here, like, let's say, picking at my nails, not really listening to you would be an example. I'm like fidgeting or, you know, something like that, where I'm just I'm checked out and I'm checked into some meaningless
tapping your toes obsessive
thing that I do. Yeah. So all of those things are stonewalling. So just one other quick note. Stonewalling is often a result of being not just emotionally overwhelmed, but physiologically overwhelmed. And we've talked about how our emotions and our bodies are intertwined and they're not really different things.
Like you can feel something physically that's tied to your emotion that you're feeling.
Yeah. And so stonewalling often is a result of being physiologically overwhelmed. Your body is responding to the conversation that you're having or the interaction you're having in a way that is actually shutting you down and making you less capable of engaging. Mm-hmm. And so it's not always just a choice that I'm going to ignore you. It's kind of, it's a defense mechanism of sorts. Mm-hmm. I'm going to disengage because this is feeling threatening or I'm feeling overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Right? And one other important note is 85% of the time, it's men who are stonewalling over women, right? Which probably doesn't surprise you. But especially men have to be careful and watch out for this one, right? And really where it's problematic is when it becomes a habit, right? Where, okay, whenever my wife is talking, whenever my partner is talking,
that's your backup.
I just start to shut down. Yeah. Oh, here we go again about the kids.
It's your default.
And I just check out right away and I stop listening. And what happens is you create this pattern where one partner is trying to reach the other by bringing up a topic or they're trying to have this conversation. Really what they're trying to do is connect, right? In fact, often things like criticism, right? When one partner gives a piece of criticism where, you know, they're asking you to do something different, maybe they don't do it quite in the right way. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting myself out there, right? And am I getting a response from you? And stonewalling means the answer is no, you're not getting a response. Right. And so when someone puts themselves out there and they don't get a response,
they double down.
Right. Yeah. They get more intense. And so that's where sometimes people feel nagged, right? Is, oh, I'm not responding. I wish you would leave me alone. And it's like, I wish you would respond so that we could have this conversation. What do I have to do to get your attention? And it becomes this pattern where you both just do more of your thing, right? And stonewalling is actually getting you deeper rather than helping you in those cases.
Well, it sounds like a really tricky thing to get out of, like that habit, if you're already in that habit, right?
Yeah. And it's a hard one because, I mean, even Gottman would tell you, well, if you're stonewalling, the key to fixing it is just to stop stonewalling.
Oh, it's so easy.
And but what they really mean by that is not that you just magically stop doing it, but it's instead of just disengaging unannounced from the conversation is speaking your feelings and saying, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed. Or if you really want to, one thing Gottman even talks about is having some kind of a sign. You know, it's your classic kind of safe word sort of thing where it's like, okay, if I say pineapple, that means the conversation is done. Like I need a break
from this conversation.
Right. And so you can go that route. I think for most couples, they just are not going to do that.
Yeah.
And so I am a fan of just speaking your feelings and saying where you're at. Hey, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now. I don't think I can engage in this right at the moment. Give me some time.
Right. Like take a break.
Yeah. And the key is you have to honor that break. Right. Because otherwise you're just trapping this person in a conversation that they're not prepared to have. Now, this is where you can't cheat. You can't say, you know, I can't have this conversation right now, or I'm feeling overwhelmed. I can't have this conversation right now. And you can't just leave and use that as an excuse to not deal with it. Right. This is not your out. And in fact, to prevent this, what I would tell couples is, look, if somebody needs to take a break from a conversation, take a break. Right. Where things get out of hand is when people don't stop and take a break when they need to. And so if you're to the point where you actually can't have this conversation because you're shut down, Gottman says about 20 minutes is the minimum that it takes for your body to actually kind of calm down and for you to get back into a place where you can talk. But take that break. But I tell people, if you're the one that says, I need a break or I need space from this conversation or I need to think, right? I tell people you're responsible for initiating the conversation at a later time. And you should tell the person generally when you're going to come back to it. In general, I want you to come back to it within 24 hours. Mm-hmm. If you want to sleep on it, that's fine. Sleep does wonders for processing. I'm not a big fan of never go to bed angry.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Like, go to bed angry and wake up and be like, oh, okay, it turns out I was just tired.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Instead of fighting about something else. Go eat a snack. Yeah. And so, you know, within 24 hours, but if, for example, if Leah and I are arguing about something and I'm like, I don't have any words right now. I can't mm-hmm. talk about it. Then what I'll tell her is, hey, let's talk about it after the boys go to bed, or we'll talk about it in the morning, mm-hmm. or let's get a snack, or let's just watch our show. We'll talk about it later. Mm-hmm. And then if I'm the one that put it off, I can't stress this enough. I know I've said it a couple of times, but I am responsible for initiating the conversation. Mm-hmm. Because what's really awkward for the person who you leave is they don't know when you're okay again.
Right.
You've left overwhelmed and they're like, should I go and like talk to them? Do they just want to be left alone right now? And it leaves them in this really anxious place. And they probably want to talk about it. They're probably mm-hmm. getting torn up inside because they can't talk about it right now.
Right. And they don't know what you're thinking. They don't know what you're feeling. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So I think you owe it to them to tell them, let's talk about this approximately when, and mm-hmm. then you come back and initiate so they don't have to feel that pressure. Mm-hmm. Right? One last thing on stonewalling is what you're doing during that break is important. So if I walk away from this conversation having told you I need to step away, mm-hmm. right? I don't just get to walk away. I have to tell you that's happening. Then what I'm not doing is I'm not going off to my corner to formulate a plan on how I'm going to win the argument when I come back. Mm-hmm. I'm not walking away muttering to myself about how awful you are. What I'm doing is I'm trying to self-soothe. I'm trying to bring myself down. I'm trying to calm down. I'm trying to be aware of how I'm feeling. What is it that's making me shut down right now? And how can I come back and express my feelings and my reaction to our conversation, right? So don't just walk away and think about how you're going to win when you come back. It's important what you do when you're gone.
Sound advice.
Stonewalling.
That's the final horseman.
Frau Blücher.
Blücher. Points if you get that reference.
All right. So we've done this once previously when we talked about cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we want to do on the podcast is highlight different modalities of therapy and different kinds of therapy, because it's not all the same and different mm-hmm. approaches jive a little bit better with different people. And today, in keeping with our content about the Four Horsemen lately, we want to talk about Gottman Method couples therapy. I'm just going to walk you through Gottman Method couples therapy and tell you a little bit about what that would look like if you were to go to a therapist that practiced this kind of therapy for couples. And so really what it's based in is it's based in all of the research that Gottman has done about couples and what healthy couples do and what couples that stay married do. This includes the Four Horsemen and a whole bunch of other things. You can find those in his book called 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. Mm-hmm. That's a really good summary of a lot of the research that he's done. And then the model here is something that they call the sound relationship house.
So as we're talking about this, try to picture a house.
Yeah. And we're actually looking at it right now. Yeah, as we're looking through at the image. And if you look it up, you'll find an image of it. That's the sound relationship house. And it's a model that shows all of these different aspects of a relationship that make it successful. And what a therapist is going to do practicing this modality of therapy is they're going to focus on each of these different parts of your relationship. And there are going to be activities. Gottman's stuff, there's a lot of really cool and helpful worksheets, which mm-hmm. worksheets are not for everybody when it comes to therapy, but for people that like concrete activities and things to actually do, mm-hmm. Gottman does great stuff.
Gottman has like a board game, don't they?
I think so. They have a board game. They do. And the other thing about Gottman's stuff is they do a lot of assessment around these different components of the sound relationship house. And mm-hmm. so you'll likely do a fair amount of assessment up front. The first session is often assessment. If you go to see someone that practices specifically Gottman Method couples therapy. And so here are the different areas that they're going to focus on with their assessment and intervention. And so the first one, he calls it building love maps. And this is at the bottom foundation mm-hmm. of our sound relationship house. And what building love maps means is it's knowing your partner's world. It's knowing what makes them tick. It's knowing and understanding them. You know things about them. You know their past. You know the things that bother them. You know the things that are sensitive for them, mm-hmm. right? Like if we're talking about this particular topic, I know that that's something that my partner's sensitive to, right? And Leah and I, we know some of those things for each other.
Yeah, we could be in a room together interacting with someone, and it's really funny how when the interaction is over, Andy will come up to me and be like, okay, I know that bothered you, so do you want to talk about it? Or, hey, how did that sit with you, you know?
Yeah, like it happened, I remember once it happened several years ago at church. Something came up, someone said something, and I looked over at Leah and I was like, oh, hell no. Like, I can't say that around you. Like, that's not okay. So it's things like that. Do I know my partner? Do I kind of know what makes them tick?
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. Second thing, sharing fondness and admiration. So to me, this is the like factor. Do we like each other? Is there fondness in our interactions with each other? Do we talk about each other with some fondness and admiration? Mm-hmm. Do we like things about each other?
Right. It's that whole thing where it's like, well, I love you, but I don't have to like you kind of a attitude. Do the reverse of that.
Yeah,
right?
That works for your parents. It doesn't work for your spouse. You do kind of have to like
you
your
have
spouse
to like
a
them.
Little bit. And so that's the fondness and admiration piece. I'll talk a little bit more later about how you can kind of see that one show up and how you could mm-hmm. actually do a little self-assessment on this. Mm-hmm. But the next thing, third thing, turning towards instead of away. This means that we engage with each other. We don't ignore problems. We don't ignore each other. We don't become roommates mm-hmm. where we live in the same space, but we don't talk. We're not just staying together for the kids, but not talking about our relationship or
right.
doing anything to make our relationship good.
Right. Okay.
The fourth thing, the positive perspective. This is basically just having a positive attitude around problem solving mm-hmm. where we are going to get together and try to be productive when it comes to solving problems. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get caught up in being right.
Or
we're not going to get hung
who
up
did.
On
who,
blame. Yeah.
Blame, that's the word.
Yeah, that's a good example. We're going to focus on solving a problem and moving forward. Mm-hmm. Number five, managing conflict. And notice they don't say resolving conflict. They're very specific about that.
I appreciate that, yeah.
And the reason being, there are certain problems in your marriage that are solvable where we can talk about it and we do resolve conflict, mm-hmm. but there are certain problems or certain things where you disagree and it's not a big enough deal that you don't want to be together anymore, but it's a big enough deal to you that you're not going to agree on it.
And it's probably going to come up multiple times.
Right. Like if you disagree with your partner on politics, mm-hmm. or it could be the thing I talked about earlier with Leah and I. Where it comes to risk-taking and decision-making.
Yeah, it's just different ways of doing something.
Leah is never going to process things as much as me, and I'm never going to take action as quickly as Leah, and we're mm-hmm. always going to clash on that a little mm-hmm. bit. And it's not trying to make each other different. It's how do we manage that difference? That would be an example of a perpetual problem, right? So tools for being respectful, not doing damage, right? How do we manage conflict? The next one, number six, make life dreams come true.
And I love that because there's something Disney about it, you know?
I know, right? And to me, I look at this and I'm like, make life dreams come true. Oh, how nice. Like, mm-hmm. let's make everybody's dreams come true. Mm-hmm. And I tend not to talk in those terms, but I do feel and think in those terms.
Right.
Like my dreams are important. Mm-hmm. And
well, and you make my dreams important and a priority too. Like it's this thing of like, hey, what do you want to do in 5 years? And we do that pretty frequently. Like we've been married for 7 years and I know that we've like done the whole like in 5 years thing. So
yeah.
Multiple times.
And it's shared. We're both trying to make each other's dreams mm-hmm. come true.
Make it happen.
What I was hoping you were going to, the way I wanted you to end that sentence was, you know, and you do that. You make my dreams come true.
You do. You make my
there
dreams
it is.
Come true. Ooh, woo, woo, woo.
It's funny because you actually, that song, you said.
It was going to be our wedding, so I wanted it to be our wedding song.
That song makes you think of me, but the funny reason is it's because it's from the movie 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, that too, and you look
with
like
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt.
And right after, what is it, right after he gets laid, then it's like him walking through the street the next day to that song, and you were like, that's basically going to be you. And I was like,
right.
All
right.
So anyway. Number seven is creating shared meaning.
This is the roof of the house.
The roof of the house. It's at the very top. And what shared meaning is it's the experiences that we share together. It's the way that we're going through life together as a unit. and that we are connected, not just individuals, right? How do we create that shared meaning? And these are kind of your shared dreams, even in some cases, mm-hmm. right? What are we both working at together? And then the pillars on the side of the house,
that right, are kind of holding it all together, yeah, encapsulating it.
They run through all of these things that mm-hmm. we talked about, our trust and commitment.
We kind of talked about trust quite a bit in one of our other episodes.
A little bit. We're going to talk about it way more mm-hmm. in the future, though. But there's a particular thing. I mean, trust is a big word. There's lots of different ways we trust a person. Mm-hmm. This specifically is that we trust our partner's intentions. And what I mean by that is we trust that what they do with our best interest at heart, or they at least don't do it with ill intent.
Yeah.
Right? Like even when they do something stupid, or even when they make a mistake, when they do something that hurts us or bothers us, mm-hmm. we don't think they did it on purpose.
Right.
And that's really, really important. It actually is kind of a tipping point for a relationship, whether I trust that you just made a mistake and it really hurt me and it really pissed me off, mm-hmm. but I know you didn't do it to hurt me and piss me off mm-hmm. versus, oh, you did that to spite me. Mm-hmm. Huge difference. That's at the center of a whole bunch of things. So that's the trust piece, is trusting intentions. And then the last piece, the other pillar, is commitment. And what commitment is about in this particular case is, first of all, knowing that we're going to be there for each other. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about earlier a little bit, you're not just going to turn and run. You're not going to leave at the first sign of trouble. You're going to stick with me.
Yeah, it's sticking through those hard times, because all of the things that we listed inside the home, like all of the sections, they require, there's going to be bumps along the way. It's not going to be smooth mm-hmm. sailing.
Like turning towards instead of away. Mm-hmm. That takes commitment.
Yeah, and like the positive perspective, meaning that in conflict, like a lot of these are based in conflict, right? Managing mm-hmm. conflict. And so having that commitment will carry you through it.
Right. So one other piece of commitment is, if we go back to the soulmates piece that we started with today, mm-hmm. I mean, we've all, Leah, I'm sure you've thought about this. I've thought about it.
Yeah, we've had discussions about it. What would life happened look like
if I ended up with somebody else?
Yeah, what would life look like if we had married someone else? Yeah.
And on the one hand, let's be honest, soulmates, I don't think are a real thing. You probably would have been fine with any number of people, mm-hmm. right? But once you've chosen a person, then you have to start believing that they're your soulmate because mm-hmm. you chose them. Mm-hmm. And so when I think back and I think of other people I could have ended up with, do I think I'm so glad I ended up with Leah? Or do I think, oh man, I really wish things had worked out with that other person? Because, you know, 7 years into this, I'm a little, I don't know, things could be better. Right? I'm not, that's an example. She's looking at me right now like, I know that's just an example, but don't say that
out loud.
Clarify
to our listeners that is not how you feel.
That is not the case. And that's actually what I was trying to communicate last week. It was November, and I was trying to tell her how grateful I was that I ended up with her because it had turned out better than I thought it would. That's kind of the way I framed it. But what I really meant by that is that when I look back and I think of any of the other people that I could have been with, mm-hmm. like there is no wondering. In fact, there's a little bit of cringe factor when I think of other people I could have ended up with. And I'm like, ugh. And then I just like want to go over and hug you and be like, don't get any further away from me than you are right now.
The feeling is mutual.
And so that's another piece of commitment is, am I choosing this person as a soulmate? And that's why I chose that quote at the beginning, is because he talks about through commitment, mm-hmm. a person becomes your soulmate over the course of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And, you know, think about that. When I think about ending up with somebody else, mm-hmm. right? How does that make me feel towards the person that I did end up with?
Right.
Right. Do I compare them favorably with other people? Right. If I were to compare Leah to an imaginary or real other person, would Leah win?
Every time.
And she does every time. And if you look at your spouse, right? They should win. Right?
They should win.
Because you picked them. And mm-hmm. that's what commitment is you compare them favorably. You're on their side. You're seeing their good over any of the negative, right? So those are some of the things that a therapist is going to be focusing on that's using Gottman Method. Again, through assessment, through intervention, lots of different ways that they'll access some of these things, mm-hmm. right? So let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to give you a little more info and some specifics on how I use this in my practice and what I think of this as a modality in general.
We'll be right back after this.
All right, Jack, let's do a quick sound check.
Dad is helping me. Buzz Buzz, Fall Honey Podcast News.
Right, so I have Jack with me.
Yes!
Jack, who are you?
I am a kid. J-A-C-K is my name, and I'm helping Dad with the podcast right now.
Yeah, so here you are. So my son Jack is here to help me out with a little part of the podcast today.
Yes, and I am.
Jack, I have a few questions for you. Do you know what they are?
No.
All right, so first time. First question for you, Jack. Here we go. Are you ready?
Yes.
Did you too? Nice.
Sorry.
Nice. All right, so first question. How old are you?
Five.
Five. Okay. Second question is, what is love?
It's when someone likes another person and they both get married, I think.
What does love feel like?
It feels like hugs or kisses.
Where do you feel it in your body? Like, you know how sometimes you feel feelings in your body?
I feel it in my heart.
How do you show your brother that you love him? First of all, what's your brother's name?
Todd.
And how old is Todd?
Two.
So how do you show Todd that you love him?
By hugging him, or probably trying to chase him around when we're playing.
Okay, so by hugging him and playing with him?
Yeah.
So one more question. How do mommy and daddy show each other that they love each other?
Probably by working together. They hug each other and help each other.
All right. Anything else you want to tell our listeners, Jack?
Well, our listeners should hear this. Buzz Buzz, Pot Honey Podcast News. Buzz Buzz, this is going to be on your headphones or microphones if you are hearing us right now. Buzz Buzz, Pot Honey Podcast, Buzz Buzz, Bees.
All right, welcome back. Well, we're excited. I'm excited, Andy, for you to talk about your experience with interviewing couples and kind of the method that you use for all that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We don't actually talk about different kinds of therapy that much.
No.
Like, I don't really talk about that part of my kind of my professional life that much. Yeah. We talk about other things. But let me start just by telling you kind of my take and what I think as a therapist about this modality of therapy. First of all, I think it's great. I think it has a lot of merit. I think it's really good for people who are looking for something that feels really practical. I think it's good for people that are looking for concrete tools. If you want to leave your therapy sessions with potentially with homework, right? So it gives you something that you can actually work on. Mm-hmm. If worksheets and things like that help you process. And I'm not saying every therapist is just going to be giving you worksheets all the time. But what I am saying is that the Gottmans have done a really good job developing really helpful tools like that mm-hmm. as part of their modality of therapy. Where I find that it seems to fall short a little bit for me and how I prefer to do therapy is it feels a little bit too cognitive to me. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's kind of the head and the heart, right? You have the thinking and you have the feeling. And I, in my experience working with couples, they need a lot of kind of in the trenches, emotional, experiential work with each other to actually build back connection. And I find that Gottman's stuff can do a good job of that. It's just not how I prefer to approach it. It feels a little bit more on the thinking side than the feeling side, which can be really good. And it can work really well for a lot of people. But I wouldn't say that I am a Gottman method couples therapist. That wouldn't be my number one modality for couples therapy. But that being said, let me say a couple of things that I do take from this and how I really use this, because I do use it a fair amount. I mean, the Four Horsemen I use a lot. Those are always really helpful. A lot of the concepts in the Sound Relationship House or some of the things that Gottman's research points to in terms of what leads couples to not stay together, right? There's lots of things that I use in there, lots of information that I use to teach to give people good information, give people insights. But a few of the things that I use specifically from Gottman's method is, first, I'm going to share three different things with you. And a couple of these happen right in the interview and are some of the first things that I watch for in my first session with a couple. And so the first thing is I ask this question, and it sounds like a getting to know you question, but it's not. And it's not that I'm tricking people. It's that I'm trying to get an honest picture of where they are. And so when I ask, tell me the story of how you met, and then listen to their response, what I'm listening for is that fondness and admiration, right? When you talk about how you met, do you sound like you like your story? Do you sound like you kind of minimize your story? Do you play up the negatives and minimize the positives, mm-hmm. right? Do you talk about having overcome things in meeting each other? Is there lightness? Is there friendliness to how we talk about our story of how we met and how we got here today, right? And when couples talk about their story of how they met and how they came to be here today, when they talk about that mostly in negative terms, or if they seem really disinterested in it, or if they seem actively negative about it, right? What that tells me is, hey, I'm not seeing a lot of fondness and admiration. And I don't, as a therapist, no therapist reads a ton into one little thing like that. Mm-hmm. This is just one thing that I start with, and it tells me kind of what else to ask. And mm-hmm. honestly, if I ask a couple this question, tell me the story of how you met, and they tell me a really light story where it seems like they liked each other at the time, they may not like each other a lot right now, but if they tell that story from kind of a positive standpoint and they like their story of how they met and mm-hmm. how they came to be, then that's a little bit of a sigh of relief for me, because it means, okay,
we have something to work
with. We still have some fondness for each other. That's good. Right? Yeah. They can still access that.
It's awesome.
And you can actually do a little bit of self-assessment with this one. Think about it. When you meet other people and you tell your story, what do you say?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I love it when we have couple friends, as we've been making more and more couple friends in our area. I really like to hear how people tell the story together. Because, like, sure, one thing is if I ask, like, a mommy friend, hey, how'd you and your husband meet? I'm getting one side of the story. But, like, when they're together, it's really fun to see when a couple is like, oh, no, remember you did this. Or, like, they finish each other's, they fill in the story together.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
And it doesn't even have to be a long story. Sometimes it's a two-sentence story, but you can kind of get the feel of it just from that. So think about, how do I talk about our story? And if it's negative, and if you have some negative feelings there, something to think about. Right. The second piece that I use from Gottman's stuff pretty quickly up front, I'm listening for whether or not they trust each other's intentions, right? And so if I'm hearing one person tell me that their spouse is doing something to spite them, or they're doing something because, oh, he does this because he doesn't love me, or she does this just because she likes to be right,
mm-hmm.
right? Or she likes to nag at me, right? Mm-hmm. Or, oh, he just thinks that what he wants is more important. And they start putting those negative things on each other.
They're like making assumptions.
Mm-hmm. And they're negative assumptions about the other person's intent. Mm-hmm. The intent is the big thing. And this is another sigh of relief for me as a therapist, as if they don't talk about each other with mistrust towards each other's intentions, right? Then that's okay. We're still in pretty good shape here, actually. Mm-hmm. But that one really is like a balance scale. It kind of tips at some point. There's not a ton of gray in my experience. You either trust a person's intentions or you don't, right? And so when we tip into, I don't trust your intentions anymore, I don't trust that you have my best interest at heart, I actually think you're doing things trying to harm me, we're in a whole different world than we are when it's, you do these things that hurt me, but I don't think you mean to. Mm-hmm. Those are night and day difference, right? So that's another thing that I take from this. That's that trust pillar that we talked about. So a third thing that I look for pretty frequently, and this is more active and ongoing in the therapy process, is what I'm watching for is, are one of these people disengaging when they have something to say? Mm. Right?
What would that look like?
So a couple going back and forth on something. Okay. And then I see someone get, they just go quiet all of a sudden.
Okay, so they stop responding.
Yeah, and so it looks like stonewalling. And this is where I go a little bit different direction with stonewalling than where Gottman might. But what I'm watching for is, are you engaging with each other? And do I think that you need a break? Or do I think that you're feeling something that you need to communicate? And so when I see that, when I see someone kind of turning away instead of turning towards, then I will pause and I might even interrupt someone and stop them in mid-sentence and say, hang on, Jim, I think we lost you. What's going on? Mm, what are you thinking okay. about? And I'll say, hey, I noticed that you kind of stopped talking. It seems like there's something going on, like you're feeling something right now. What's happening for you? And, you know, talk to me. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to bring that partner back in. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get that person to tell us what they're feeling and then help the other person respond to it in a way that makes that experience safe. Right. So if I'm going to, you know, instead of disengaging, if I'm going to lean into this relationship, I need to know that it's safe to do that and that I'm not going to lose, that I'm not going to get beat up even more. Mm-hmm. Right. Sometimes that's why people disengage, is they're just cutting their losses. It's like, I'm going to lose this, or I'm just going to get more hurt if I try this. So I'm just going to stop now. And what I'm trying to do is draw them back in and say, no, I'm here. Let me coach you through this. What are you feeling? And that'll help their partner respond to that in a way that makes it safe for them to do what they just did. And that experience helps build trust that the other person has good intentions.
Got it.
Towards them.
That makes right? sense.
And so in those moments where someone turns away, that's an indicator for me that something that just happened is making you feel something. Now, it could be that they're stonewalling and we've kind of missed the window and they need a break. Mm-hmm. Right. But often there's a little space in there where if you get in and you bring people back in together, often that's where the most productive conversation happens. Frankly, this is where our most productive conversations happen.
Yeah.
Is there's always a turning point. If we're really getting into something and I mean, we're not yellers,
no.
but we do get really adamant about things.
We're the opposite. Well, and sometimes we're the way we react is we're the opposite of yellers. We tend to get quiet. And then we kind of have to pull, like, I remember probably the first year or two of our marriage, it was pretty common to be like, I'm going to squish the emotions out of you. Like,
but it's like squish, like a gentle hug,
yeah.
not a squish, like a, you're not, it's yeah. not a wrestling move.
I'm not like
you're
not overpowering trying to crush you. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, it's gently kind of bringing the other person back in. And so in a number of our discussions, there's kind of a pattern that happens is we'll talk. We'll get going and we won't be getting anywhere. We're trying to understand each other. And then there's a moment where someone like goes to pee and it pauses for a second. And that's a choice point. Like, do we disengage? Do we just leave it and not finish it? Or do we finish it?
Yeah.
And sometimes we just need to let it go and be done with it.
Or sometimes it goes so late that it's like I get overwhelmed and I'm done.
Right.
Because I get tired.
But I mean, for example, the last one I can think of. Leah left. She went back, got into bed. I was waiting for her to come back out and then she didn't. And so I sat there and I stewed and I was mad that she didn't come back to finish the conversation. Mm-hmm. So then when I went back to the room and the choice I made in this case was to re-engage. And so I went back and I told her, I'm upset that you didn't come back and talk to me.
Yeah.
Like I didn't like this. And then she told me that she didn't like that we weren't getting anywhere and it felt like it just wasn't going to end well. And so why keep doing it? And there was a moment after we hashed that little bit out in a few minutes, once I reengaged, where I felt myself disengaging and like, ah, she doesn't get it, or I'm just going to stop now. But there was something going on for me where I felt myself shutting down. And I was like, no, I need to, there's something here. And where I am emotionally in this moment is an opportunity. Because if I can express where I'm at to her, I trust that she's going to respond well. And I managed my way through it. It's not easy. It's really hard to put words to some of these things sometimes. But I remember that conversation ending pretty well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
But it wouldn't have if we'd turned away and we hadn't stuck with it. Now, I'm not saying you always, always, always need to stick with it. Sometimes you do need to let it go. And sometimes we do let it go and we don't go back to things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we sleep on it and we wake up and we're like, who cares?
It wasn't that big a deal.
Right. Yeah. But that's really a big thing. And it's something that we can all watch in our relationships is when am I turning towards my partner and when am I turning away? And if I'm turning away, am I doing the opposite of what I need to be doing right now for the health of my relationship? Am I avoiding conflict that needs to be had?
Yeah.
Am I avoiding a difficult conversation that needs to be had? Right. And if I don't have the skills to do that, I mean, partly that's what therapy is for.
Yeah.
Is to make space and to help you learn how to have those kinds of conversations. But that's another thing that I watch for that's kind of informed by this Gottman method is, are we turning towards each other or away? So if you've been a regular listener on the podcast, then you'll know that typically we end by drawing a bee from the hive. And I've decided that we are not going to do that anymore.
An executive order has been written.
Because I can do that as the president of this podcast. So no more of that. I hope that you'll take away actions just from the content we create. We're going to continue to do everything else that we've been doing.
Yeah, and we really appreciate you listening. Thank you for being here with us today. And we hope that you enjoyed our conversation about relationships, as Andy and I are very vulnerable and open about our relationship and things that happen behind our closed doors.
It'll just get worse as we learn to trust you more.
We would greatly appreciate it if you follow the podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to find us on Facebook and Instagram for more great ideas. Also, check out our blogs and learn more about us on thoughthoney.com. Have a great day, and remember to just be yourself.
See you next time.